I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play, or Jalen on the breakaway, or Kyrie when he make a trade. And nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie's.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com, here with Sam Jam Packard. The great. What was that noise?
I was just making a noise for Man's Not Hot, Big Shaq. Sorry for interrupting.
That's a beautiful start. So, I gotta get into a description of our podcast early in this one. I actually got yelled at. I got yelled at the other night. I got scolded.
By whom?
By David Locke, our boss. Ooh. David Locke. For those who don't know, he is the head honcho of the podcast network, the Locked On Podcast Network. He is a wonderful...
He's a play-by-play guy for the Jazz, and he's quite good at that job.
Also the play-by-play guy for the Jazz. He didn't really scold me, but he did say he was listening to our podcasts, and we should give the people a little bit more about us at the beginning. Just in case you guys haven't been listeners forever, we're going to suck you in right here with this intro. Anyway...
Oh, and then that's what we wanted to do, and then I immediately made noises when I was introduced.
Yeah.
So I think David Locke would be proud.
So things are going well. It's really going well. Anyway, we are the Locked On Celtics podcast, the only daily Celtics podcast, the greatest Celtics podcast ever, and we're here to give you all the great stuff about the Celtics every single weekday that there is, or that there ever has been, except for... Monday, because
days when life gets in the way, and sometimes there's just not enough shit to talk about.
Yeah, but most of the time we're here Monday through Friday. We are the podcast gods, and so if this is your first time on the show, welcome aboard. If it's not your first time, sorry for putting you through this. We are going to get to some basketball talk now. We got some Anthony Davis rumors. There are going to be some Anthony Davis rumors for years, I feel like. And there have been some for years. But they popped back up again today. Adrian Wojnarowski spoke to Anthony Davis, who doesn't seem thrilled with what's going on in New Orleans. Also doesn't seem particularly thrilled with the way the Celtics treated Isaiah Thomas. But we'll get to that. We also got some Isaiah Thomas talk. He's potentially coming back first week of January. Although he kind of made fun of that report on Twitter, so who knows when exactly he will come back. But the Celtics play the Cavs on January 3rd. It's possible Isaiah will be back for that. I hope he is. We'll talk a little bit about that possible matchup later. Let's start with Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis, the rumors have begun, Sam, right?
They've been begun. They've already been there.
Yeah.
Ever since his... Basically, the entire summer, Anthony Davis, because he's a star big man playing for a not-so-great franchise, has been on the Celtics' radar. I mean, that's the thing that's kind of frustrating about this story is that, like, it didn't really feel like news. It's just like Woj got a quote about kind of Anthony Davis talking to Dell Demps specifically about Boston rumors, and then also he kind of mentioned Isaiah Thomas. But, like, I didn't really feel like there's any new information. Of course, Danny Ainge is interested in trying to add a talent like Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis is an amazing basketball player who is like the exact prototype of what you want in a big man. There's not news there because it's just like kind of reporting the obvious, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, very much so. The one thing I want to ask you is, has Boston's success and the way things are working with Kyrie Irving and Al Horford and the way Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown are growing up quickly, has any of that changed the way you think about Anthony Davis? Like, obviously, when people brought up Anthony Davis, it's like, hell yeah, you do whatever it takes to get him. But now, now the situation's a bit different, I think, because Jason Tatum looks like a true star in the making. So I'd honestly be a little hesitant to give up Jason Tatum in a trade. Does that sound weird? I mean, I know Anthony Davis is great and everything, but
I mean, but it doesn't like, obviously, if it was just a one for one situation where it's just Jason Tatum for Anthony Davis, I feel like you take Anthony Davis. But the idea of like the Celtics making a trade is that they'd have to do Jason Tatum plus picks, probably other players. I don't even think there's I was just on Trade Machine for like last 5 minutes. I'm definitely not a cap guy, but there's no clear way of making the money work unless you're giving away like a huge piece for Anthony Davis. It's just with the Celtics being so good and the fact that they get Gordon Hayward back next season, maybe this season, who knows, 323 could be his debut. They're adding stars in the offseason to an already great team. Like, there's just no need to go out of your way to get Anthony Davis. And I guess that's like a dumb thing to say because you obviously want to add his elite talent, but just the team's pretty good now. There's no reason for them to be like kind of swinging for the fences. I think they could make the NBA finals this season. They don't need to give up a huge package just to get Anthony Davis. And you know what? Anthony Davis doesn't exactly sound like he's pushing for a trade. He just kind of sounds generally annoyed, but he seemed to be like enjoy playing with Boogie and is like wants that team to get back to the playoffs. I don't know. It's just like a kind of an odd story, but I don't think the Celtics need to make a deal. So I don't. That's another reason why I don't like get why this is a big issue.
Well, it's a big issue because Anthony Davis, and Anthony Davis is fabulous at basketball, and adding Anthony Davis to the Celtics would make them so scary.
Now, but what would you have to give up? Horford?
Probably Horford, but you might have to swing Horford to like another team, because is New Orleans going to want Horford if they trade Davis? I don't know, because then you have kind of the same issues with him. Like, he's a star, cool, but he's probably not going to stay long term if you can't put a winner around him. So I don't know. And then obviously they have Jaylen Brown, they have Jason Tatum, they have Lakers Kings pick, they have Memphis Grizzlies pick. Do you think they could make a trade without adding Tatum or Brown? What would that look like? Horford, Brown. And then load up like every future pick they had. Would that? I don't think that would be enough. I don't know if that would be enough. To put this out there, I'm the worst at talking about fake trades. I believe I was the one who said that trading for Kyrie Irving, with basically the exact same package that ended up being what it was, I said that would be beyond stupid. And I think I still think the jury's kind of still out in that trade, depending on a lot of different factors that happen in the future. I'm not always a good judge of what might be realistic. So I don't know exactly how much you'd have to pile on to get Anthony Davis, but it would be a lot. He's a legit top 10 talent. He is fantastic. He's young. What does he have now? 3 years left on his contract?
Yeah, I think 3.5.
Yeah, so like he's got
at $23 million, I'm sure it's like going up by the 15% percentages, but that's still like a cheap deal because he signed it before the cap explosion. So, no, Anthony Davis is amazing. You don't have to sell me on Anthony Davis. The very first podcast I ever had was called We Love Anthony Davis. It was actually first called We Hate Dwayne Wade, but then we couldn't get any guests because no one wanted to come on that show. Me and Ben Kitchen from WEI, shout out to him. But yeah, I'm a huge Anthony Davis fan. He's great. If I'm the Pelicans, though, and I'm giving up on that, you have to blow it up. Like, there's no reason to adding a 30-year-old Al Horford. You would have to demand Tatum, Brown, I don't know if both of them, but or a huge combination of picks. It just doesn't seem like something that the Celtics need to do, or that the Pelicans are looking to do right now. I think they're very much focused on winning and making the playoffs. So,
if I'm the Celtics, I would try to load up everything except like Kings pick, Grizzlies pick, like every pick they have, every future pick. Try to keep as much of the core together as possible. If you can, and then like it would be bad for the Celtics to lose Horford, but if you can put him in the trade or swing him to another team and make that upgrade from Horford to Davis, and it's not just an upgrade because Davis is more talented and can do more things on a basketball court, but it's also an upgrade from the standpoint of he's just younger. And when you have Kyrie Irving, who's 25, and Jason Tatum, who's 19, and Jaylen Brown, who's 21, and Gordon Hayward, who's 27, going from Horford, who's 31, to Anthony Davis, who's a lot younger than that, would be a really big deal. So that would, yeah, I mean, Anthony Davis, he's kind of been the Moby Dick for the Celtics for a long time. He's just been out there, and everyone kind of sees, like, that situation isn't going to be great in New Orleans no matter what. I think maybe there was hope that DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis could be a superstar duo, but they're just not.
They're not terrible. They're not bad.
They've been competitive, but, like, what does that core that they currently have give you? And, you know, can they bet with Cousins? I believe he's a free agent after this coming season. How much do you want to bet that you can keep that core together and keep Davis? And so at some point, I would be pretty shocked if Davis doesn't end up getting traded at some point. The Pelicans, they would have to make a huge turnaround. They haven't made the playoffs in a while. Like, even now, they're better, but really, they're not players in the Western Conference. They certainly can't compete with the Houstons and the Golden States and even some of the other teams out there. So, his situation is one that's loomed for a long time as one that they're going to need to blow it up. And obviously, the Celtics have just all the assets and all the players. And if he does hit the market, when he does hit the market, they'll be there. And obviously, they've already called. They've already called, according to Wojnarowski. I think Anthony Davis said that he's spoken to them about the Celtics calling. So
yeah, he talked to Del Demson. Was like, they're calling, but we're not going to trade you. But he like mentioned the Celtics specifically.
Yeah, so the Celtics are calling. They're calling. Of course they're calling. It's Anthony Davis.
It's Anthony Davis. They're like, they got to test the waters. I think if anything happens, it would have to be at the not until after the lottery or at the draft, because you would have to think if in order to like sell the idea to your fans of trading Anthony Davis, you'd be getting like in this scenario, the Celtics get the Lakers pick like 2 through 5, and you like package a deal that involves like the next superstar, like a number 2 pick. So I don't know. That's like, if it was like a top 3 pick in this draft, and this draft is supposed to be loaded, maybe that's more likely for a more incentive for the Pelicans to do something. But I don't know. At this point, it's not affecting the current Boston Celtics, because I just don't think it's going to happen.
But if they do add Davis, that's a title core. Like,
that's big news. Yeah,
that's a title core. That. Yeah. So he is signed through 2019-2020. So this year and 2 years after that, which means he might hit the market maybe this summer, but it's not something the Pelicans have to rush on. Like, they can see if DeMarcus Cousins, if that thing works out. They can see if they can add some talent around those guys to make things kind of work.
Them signing Drew Holiday was so dumb.
They spent a lot of money on Drew Holiday.
Spent so much of their cap, and they're like, I know they need a point guard, but just roll with Rondo and save the money, dude. Drew Holiday is 15th best point guard in the league at best.
I'm kind of a Drew Holiday guy. But yeah,
he's not bad. He's just like not worth that money.
He's like an average starting point guard. Yeah, and he kind of had them over the barrel, because if they didn't sign him, they didn't really have enough money to go after another top point guard or a top point guard. So yeah, he was like, you guys are stuck with me and you're going to pay out the ass.
Hey, good for him. Good for Drew Holiday.
Yeah, shout out to Drew Holiday getting that dough.
Getting that bag.
So yeah, Kyrie, Anthony Davis, Hayward.
Man, why don't you give Hayward, Kyrie, and Al Horford a chance, man? We haven't even seen them.
I mean,
I understand logically that Anthony Davis is awesome, but like, this team is pretty good. Like, they haven't been as good as their 16-game winning streak recently. Like, Al Horford's a very good basketball player and probably the best player on the team right now in terms of all-around play. And he hasn't played with like Gordon Hayward, who we like other people thought was going to be the best all-around player. Like, there's still star potential to be added to this team.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
There's no need to rush out and get Anthony Davis because they haven't had, like, they created this new big three and have had it for 6 minutes. Like, I think that's going to factor in a bunch into their decision making, is that we still haven't seen Gordon Hayward in this team. Right now, the Celtics are in first place and are like East contenders without him.
Yeah. Honestly, I'm bullish that Tatum is going to be an absolute superstar. Like,
well, yeah, he's shown no evidence that he won't be.
Well, yeah, but like, he's 19. I'm pretty convinced he's going to be one of the best players in the NBA one day. Like, I'm not. Obviously, I'm really high on him, but I just think with his length, his athleticism, and then just every skill, he's the type of guy you want to hold on to if possible. And even Anthony Davis, like, Anthony Davis is fantastic. Anthony Davis might make you win a title, but Jason Tatum is 19 and he's really, really good. And not only that, but you have him under team control for a long time. So that would be a big deal too. I would honestly be hesitant to give up Tatum in a trade for Davis. And I know people might come at me for that because obviously Anthony Davis is fantastic. Anthony Davis might right now be better than Jason Tatum will ever be. That's possible, but just with the age and the team control and the salaries and everything else, I'd be really hesitant to give up Jason Tatum. I think that kid's going to be an absolute star. I would try to do anything else to get Anthony Davis, but adding Jason Tatum to that deal would really, really bother me if I were the Celtics front office.
Yeah, it's been like the coolest thing about, or the thing that I think is the best you hear about Jason Tatum is like how quick of a learner he is and how much like he's shown no real weaknesses and his ability to get better and learn is like the first couple of games he wasn't taking catch and shoot threes and then they just told him to and then he started doing it. Like that seems very trivial, just like of course decide to shoot it, but I feel like if you're a rookie in the NBA and you just are not comfortable with catch and shoot threes and then, I don't know, it's something you work into, but he's been able to kind of meet every challenge as an NBA player. So you're right. Like the team control is a huge thing. The money for the first, he's still on his rookie deal for the next 3 years. So you're going to have the flexibility to go out and possibly sign other players. I don't think it's entirely insane. Of course, there's like a lot more factors, just talent for talent, like talent wise, Anthony Davis is better right now, but you're right. I would agree. I don't think like doing that deal, I feel like I've already been against the idea of trading for Anthony Davis. But the idea of like having Tatum.
Hold on, you are really against the idea of trading for Anthony Davis?
In this context, right now, I just don't think it makes any sense. You're just gonna be giving up a shit ton of value and not get that much better. What's your like bench gonna be? Like
I think you're underrating how good Anthony Davis is, man.
Who what are you giving up for him? They already have like they're already struggling right now with Marcus Morris out. Like their second unit is trash. You're gonna give up Al Horford. And then a bunch of other pieces who are probably part of your rotation. What's your team going to be? You're going to have to play Kyrie and Anthony Davis for, what, 40 minutes a night?
That would be pretty good.
Would it win you a championship? There's, like, championship teams have depth and, like, good role players and people who can fill in. You're playing a lot of Yabu right then if you're, like, ooh. Yabu and Shane Larkin forever.
Now I'm even more on board with the Anthony Davis trade.
I just need Yabu to dance. I don't need him to play.
But I think to some extent, when you get top caliber talent that's that good, it just makes everybody else better. Like we've seen it already with this group, with Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and even some of the other guys, like it makes it a lot easier when you're out there with a guy like Kyrie Irving, a guy like Al Horford. You just don't have to do as much. You can just
Like Al Horford, who you want to trade out of town?
I'm not saying. Look, I want to the Celtics. I think the Celtics should ship Al Horford out of town to the first bidder. Certainly not. Like Al Horford has been fantastic for the Celtics. Al Horford is a stud. Al Horford is a big reason why they've been so damn good this season. He's an easy All Star, but Anthony Davis is first of all a different caliber of talent. And second of all, a lot younger. So when you put those two factors together, yes, if you can upgrade that, absolutely, you go out and try to do that.
Yeah, but you're arguing like two sides of the argument right now where you're saying, of course you want to go out for trade for Anthony Davis, but then you're also shouldn't give up Jason Tatum. And that's like, if I'm the Pelicans, it's Jason Tatum or nothing because he's that good. And that's like the closest thing to equal value. So you're basically arguing for two things. Like, you're arguing that the Celtics should trade for Anthony Davis, but then not give up the thing that they would need to trade for Anthony Davis.
What about like Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, Al Horford, the Grizzlies pick, and the Kings pick?
That feels like a lot. So what's your starting lineup after? Who's your shooting guard after that? Terry Rozier?
Yeah, I mean, whoever, man. Just
so it'd be Kyrie, throw Tito, somebody out Jaylen there. Brown, or Jason Tatum, Mook Morris, and Anthony Davis?
No, I mean, I would start Smart if I were Brad Stevens.
You just traded away Smart.
Oh, yeah, I did trade away Smart. Yeah.
That's the thing. It's like you have to give up to six, seven guys. I think those guys matter eventually.
But it's not about this year, right? Like, it's about getting better long term, because I don't think anyone's under the illusion that the Celtics are going to beat the Warriors this year or the Rockets.
I don't even know if the Warriors are going to make it.
Or the Rockets or whoever. Like, I don't think
the Rockets game's coming up is going to be dope. I'm very much looking forward to that.
But I don't think anyone believes that the Celtics are going to win a title this year. And so
I think Celtics Twitter would disagree. So I don't necessarily believe it, but I think there's definitely people out there who think they're capable of doing it. And that's like, I think something like I wanted to talk to you about, just because the Celtics, they got off to this crazy 16 game winning streak, and there's like, they were riding high. But recently, in like the last 2 weeks, they've just not been playing great basketball. The game against the Pacers was like a good indication of that, where we saw them play very well, and then they were just bad for like an extended stretch and allowed the Pacers to get back into the game. They got their asses kicked by the Jazz. They got their asses kicked by the Bulls. I was in person for that. That was an atrocious performance. And then they played a terrible, terrible basketball game against the Pistons. In which they were pulling out because the Pistons couldn't make a shot. But, like, the Celtics have not been as good lately as they're kind of – they got off this hot start. But then I think the most interesting statistic is, like, during that winning streak, they had the best defense in the NBA. And I think in, like, the month of December, they've had, like, the 20th best defense. So what do you think the biggest reason is for this drop-off? And do you think because of this drop-off, this is the team they are, a team that's, like you said, probably not going to beat the Warriors – at this point,
I think even when they were winning 16 straight, like, they weren't playing perfect basketball. Brad Stevens said it a few times, like, they were masking some of their issues by coming back from 16 points down all the time. Like, it's almost every game out that they were coming back from a 16 point deficit and proceeding to win basketball games. And you can't sustain that forever. Like, there are going to be times in a season when you just can't turn it back on and you can't overcome that deficit. The defensive slippage, I think that's partly just regression to the mean. Like, during that 16-game winning streak, I think pretty much through the whole winning streak, their defense was on pace to basically just be a historic defense, like be one of the top two or three defenses since the NBA changed the hand-checking rules in 2003-2004. So, and I don't think they're a really talented defensive team. They're not like the 08 Celtics type of defense. They're not, I don't think, a historic defense. So some slippage was to be expected. I think adding to that slippage is, one, the schedule is crazy. Like, the Celtics schedule right now, because they're going to London in the middle of January, They're playing a schedule like last year or 2 years ago, from before the NBA started to change the schedule to give guys more rest and help guys do that. So they're playing a throwback schedule while everybody else is playing the cushier schedule and getting more rest. And so that's been a bigger deal. I think, honestly, when you look at how teams play with rest versus without it, I think that's a bigger deal than a lot of people let on. And I think, obviously, that's going to impact your defense. So I think that's part of it. And then I think Marcus Morris's injury has hurt. Obviously, he was injured during some of the time when they were really good at the start of the season. But the bench has gone through some brutal droughts. And because of the bench going through droughts, Stevens has had to change the rotation. You've seen the last couple of games, he's had Jason Tatum and Al Horford with the bench to buoy their scoring and lift up their scoring. But that takes away the time when those guys are with the starters and the starting lineup has been really damn good. So it's a lot of factors right now, I think, why the Celtics aren't playing great basketball. And I think regression was part of it. I think the schedule was part of it. And, yeah, Mook Morris, man. They need some Mook Morris. Hey, I need mid-range Mook back in my life. So
Mook solves a lot of the second unit's issues. He just gets buckets. Like, when he puts up 15 to 20 in a game, it's so much easier for that second unit to score points. So I agree with you there. Him being out of lineup has hurt the Celtics. I never know how much to read into rest. Like, it totally is logical and it makes sense. It's just like it's something the players would never admit because they just like wouldn't say that like they're playing that tired. Or at least I don't think they would. But you're right. All the kind of science and all the nerds who go to Sloan, and I'm one of those nerds who have been to Sloan and listened to these presentations about health science and rest. And the Celtics have like a cool Australian guy who comes in to ask them like how intense their workout was after every game in practice. They're pretty like aware of this. And that's why I'm kind of surprised that they don't rest more players. Like, Stevens hasn't adopted the Popovich method of, like, complete DNP rest. And maybe he did that previously with Horford and Kyrie, but he just was, like, too earnest to say that and wanted to, like, make up an injury. But I feel like it's kind of confusing with this crazy schedule and all the back-to-backs they have that we're not seeing more rest for kind of the players like Horford. And I feel like I argued in the past that Horford doesn't need rest, but with this, if this schedule has become a big deal, then I'm all for resting guys.
Yeah, I think they kind of build in the rest, you know, like they only play guys 32, 33 minutes a game, even their best players.
So if they're doing that, how much does the schedule really impact their, like, their negative play? Or do they, it's just like they're regressing to the mean? And I don't know how much their play is fatigue related if they're like only playing 30 minutes a night.
I mean, it's the travel too, though. It's not just how many minutes a night you're playing. It's then you fly at midnight and you get in at 2 a.m. and you play the next night in a totally different city halfway across the country, and that adds up. It's not just the actual aspect of playing basketball. It's everything else that comes with the travel that is tough too. And so you're not eating right, or not eating as right as you might be otherwise sometimes, going to restaurants on the road or whatever. You're not sleeping right. You're traveling tons of miles. So all of that adds up. And it's not just the minutes. And Horford did rest against Chicago when they got – or was it Chicago? Who did he rest against?
I mean, he rested in the fourth quarter because they were – the
game. No. He rested that other game.
The next game, whatever the next Wednesday game was.
Yeah, he rested one of those games, but they have rested him a little bit. I think part of the reason why they don't rest guys more often is because they're super young. It's not like, you know, you have Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili and Tim Duncan, who are all, you know, on the latter halves of their careers. The Celtics are starting 19, 21, 25, and then Horford and Baines. You're not going to rest Baines because he's not like...
Because he's tough as shit and is not going to take rest from no one.
Yeah, because he would pile drive Brad Stevens if he ever asked him to. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of factors into it. I like this rest talk. Good rest talk.
I think we analyzed the shit out of that. And I want to ask you one more question about the defense, though. The stat that I saw on Twitter that made me kind of raise my eyebrows, and it felt very familiar because it was the type of stat I would have peddled on Twitter just a season ago, is about Kyrie's defense and the defensive rating when he's on the court and when he's off the court. I think it was a focus more recently of games, but I think it was like 113 defensive rating when he's been on the court. Have you noticed, like, just watching a slip in his personal defense? Because I was kind of surprised by that number because it's not something that's been like a glaring weakness for me. So
not really. I think that's just a factor of the team not playing as well defensively. And it was the same thing with Isaiah last year. I didn't think Isaiah was actually as bad as some of the stats said he was. Like, I think ESPN Real Plus Minus had Isaiah maybe last among all defenders in the entire league, and he wasn't the worst defender in the league. He definitely was the worst defender.
Jay Crowder, like the best player in the league last year.
Yeah,
that... he was not the best player in the league, and I love Jay Crowder, but he was not the, like, he is like top five the entire season.
Yeah, and then so I think to an extent, you know, people were probably overrating Kyrie's defense early on because nobody expected him to play any defense, and he was playing defense.
And he was trying real hard.
And now people are – I've seen that stat thrown out a few times. Like, it's funny because people throw out defensive stats without actually watching the tape and realizing what's going on, and they'll just throw out a stat that doesn't really mean much, except it means that the Celtics have not defended well during stretches when he's on the court. And Kyrie plays like 34, 35 minutes a game or whatever it is. So he's on the court most of the game. It's like,
there's going to be moments where they're bad.
If there's going to be slippage, like he's going to see some slippage on his court.
He also has to play in lineups too with the three other point guards and Semi Ojeleye. I love that Brad has just gone to the four guard lineup repeatedly, and that's like his curveball.
I'm all in for crazy Brad lineups. Let's talk about Isaiah, who might return for the Celtics game. That guy entertains me, man. So Shams Charania, I think his name is Shams Charania, he reported that Isaiah was targeting an early January return, and Isaiah came out like, league sources tell IT. IT is targeting an April return. He was just goofing. And then he kind of went after Shams' report a little bit with his follow-up tweet. So I don't know when Isaiah will come back, but I am certainly entertained by him going after people. I miss that. These Celtics don't go after people, man. They're not petty enough. They don't have enough hatred in their souls.
They definitely are not petty enough.
They don't have enough hatred in their souls.
Al Horford's the most intense guy on the team sometimes. I guess Marcus Smart can get into beef. Terry Rozier, who he tried to fight the other day? It was Kenneth Faried. He did not back down from Kenneth Faried, the manimal, and I thought that was cool. But you're right. Definitely not enough team petty. I miss Isaiah's, and I guess Jay Crowder to an extent, just their how much they are willing to engage in beef. And it's just Isaiah's a he's a fascinating little dude, man. I love watching the Book of Isaiah, like kind of how much he enjoyed Boston. He's a very genuine guy. And so I hope, like, when I first saw that report, I saw the Celtics are playing the Cavs on, what is it, January 2nd. That'd be really cool if he, like, made his debut against the Celtics in Boston. That'd be an amazing story. But
about Isaiah, there is no way that would be my first game back. Zero chance. Look, I know he wants revenge. I know he's had that January 3rd date against the Celtics circled for a long time. I know he wants to stick it to Ainge. I know he wants to prove what he believes is that the Celtics made a mistake by trading him and a package for Kyrie Irving. But here's the thing. If he doesn't have a few games in him before he plays the Celtics, if he doesn't have a bunch of practices, if he isn't fully healthy, fully ready to go, he's probably not going to be good. And Isaiah doesn't want to be not good against the Celtics. He doesn't want to be cooked by Kyrie Irving. He doesn't want to go 5-for-19 against the Celtics defense. He doesn't want to be normal against Boston. If I were him, I would want to come back either before that game, get a couple games under my belt, remove the rust a little bit, get back into the swing of things, get back into the flow, try to figure out at least a little bit how to play with LeBron before going and trying to murder the Boston Celtics. He is going to want to score 50. He is going to want to score 60. He is going to want to be pointing at his wrist, telling people what time it is. He is going to want to get as much revenge as he can in one night against the Boston Celtics. And if I were him, I'm only coming back if I'm healthy, man. I'm only coming back if I can go out there and kill people. And maybe he's not at that level yet. Maybe he won't be at that level this season. And that would be sad. That would be sad. But if I were him, I definitely wouldn't want my first game or one of my first two games to be against the Boston Celtics, because there's a lot of pressure there. And he's a different beast than I am. He's very clearly a different type of beast than I am.
He doesn't respond to pressure the same way. He doesn't respond to his body the same way as the overweight writer, podcaster who's sitting here talking about him from his bedroom. But if I were him, I wouldn't want to do it, man. I wouldn't want to do it right away. I'd want to wait for it. I'd want to be able to kill the Celtics when I met them. I'd want to be able to go at Kyrie as much as I could. I'd want to try to murder those dudes and then laugh at Ainge while I'm doing it. And I feel like that's Isaiah's mindset. But who knows? Maybe he thinks he'll be healthy. Maybe he thinks he'll be ready. Maybe he thinks that, I mean, he probably thinks it's Isaiah Thomas. He probably thinks he could go out right now and score 55 against the Celtics if he wanted to, or 35 at least. He is a different beast. I'm looking forward to that matchup, man. Kyrie versus Isaiah. Two wizards. Two absolute wizards. It's been a joy to cover those two dudes the last 2 years. I mean, man. Among shot makers, among playmakers in the league, those guys are just special. And they do it in just such exciting ways. It's been really fun to cover both of them. I've enjoyed covering both of them. Can't wait to see them both on the same court going at each other pretty soon. Maybe January 3rd. Maybe February 11th, which I believe is the next game, which is also Paul Pierce's retirement ceremony, could be a fantastic battle. Could be a lot of fun with the Celtics and the Cavs. I need it. Give it to me. Anyway, that's it. If you want to follow us, search for Locked On Celtics. Subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star rating. We're the only Celtics Monday through Friday podcast, the best Celtics podcast that's ever been created. We are the Celtics podcast goats. So thanks for listening. We appreciate it. That's it for this episode of the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Yeah, Jay King and John Corrales.